started. The last month's problem of the month had Brianna Wiener, Amy Menezes, who isn't here right now, but congratulations to him. And we have this month's problem set, if you haven't already picked it up, for free too. And our speaker is Ida Margal, who is going to speak about subgroups of products.
All right, so before I start, maybe just introduce myself to y'all a little bit, give you a little background so we can bond. Yeah, so we're bonding already. So actually, not a lot of people know this, like even Keenan doesn't know this, I don't think. I originally was not interested in math. I actually applied to the literature department at UT originally. Yeah, just laughing already. Yeah, I was like, I was really interested in like interpretations of the effect of the unicycle on constructions of gender identities in contemporary Western societies, which I know what you guys are thinking, like, it's been done to death, you know, and it has, but I wanted to, like, approach it from a Marxist perspective, which I think would have been great, but there was, like, a clerical error somewhere in some office, and I was admitted to the math department instead. So that's where I am. So I'm not very good at this, and I'm probably going to make a lot of mistakes. That was the point of the story. So you guys should kind of maybe watch me and make sure I don't lie to you. All right, so I also don't do a lot of group theory, and this was actually kind of an accident that I had to learn about this. So I have a buddy of mine in the department, his name is Bobby Grizzard. He does number theory with Professor Voller, and he kind of came to me and asked me for help doing sort of just coding stuff with GAP and SAGE, because he had sort of big groups that he wanted to look at and subgroup lattices, and it's like too hard to do by hand, and we just wanted to like generate evidence. And so we did that for a while, and then I sort of started becoming interested in it after a while, and actually started doing some of the math. And I realized that I had to learn some group theory that I didn't know, and you know, I have like the regular group theory background that most people who like literature do, which is, I don't know, what are the big theorems? You have like the CLS theorems and whatever, I don't know, stuff like that. Fundamental theorem for finitely generated abelian groups. And I kind of felt like if you'd asked me, you know, stop me on the street and were like, yo, bro, you know any group theory? I'd be like, yeah, sure, I know group theory. But there's like a lot of basic stuff that I realized I don't know. And nothing sounds more basic to me than like, I guess, the subject of this talk, which is if you know what two groups are and you take their direct sum, do you know what the subgroups of that are? And I realized like I actually didn't know how to answer that question. So that's like the goal here. I wanted to make this as like accessible as possible, so I may have undershot. I don't know, a lot of you guys are maybe upperclassmen. So you guys just, you know, if it's slow, we'll go faster. And maybe I'll just make some stuff hard at the end. All right, so starting off here, so step one was make a joke. I did that. All right, step two, background. So I think I'm going to make a little table of words, which maybe a lot of you guys know, maybe you don't. So, and then I'm going to make a column of like examples. So we're just going to kind of warm up, give examples of what the words are referring to, and then maybe some non-examples. So here's the first column. So it's definition, and then example. I don't know that all these are going to have non-examples. I don't know if that makes sense, but and then bam. Yeah. Bam. All right. So real basic group. Yeah. All right, awesome. What's an example of a group? I'm going to put the integers under addition. All right, awesome. What's a non-example? So, I mean, lots of stuff, right? Like Aretha Franklin, it's like not a group. But that's like not an interesting non-example. So, I don't know, someone want to throw out an interesting non-example? Oh, man, that's awesome. Yeah, because that's like what I had here, but not quite. So, yeah, Z under multiplication. So, like, which group axiom fails there, maybe? And yeah, that's it. That's actually it. Okay, never mind. Yeah. All right. Anything else? Can we get a different axiom to fail? Someone else want to throw something out? Not you. Someone else. GL. Oh my gosh. Yeah. All right. Awesome. Yeah. So like right over what field, man? No, I'm just kidding. It doesn't matter. Yeah. All right, awesome. Okay, great. All right, so we all know what groups are, I guess. What was the next thing I wanted to say? Abelian groups. All right, awesome. So, abelian groups. Sweet. So, example, You all ready for that? Oh, yeah. All right, so what's a non-example? You can't do these. It's still got to be a group now, but just not abelian. Yeah, GLN under multiplication. All right, awesome. Yeah, so we got, actually, is that exactly right? Do we need, like, is that right? Is that, all right, anyway, sorry, that was really dumb. All right, homomorphism. All right, great, so, man, I really undershot this. This is ridiculous. All right, so what's a homomorphism? You got a map from one group to another group, and it's just got to satisfy this one property, right, that it distributes over the group product. All right, so what's an example of like a homomorphism? I don't know. So let's take something like this. So Z, shouldn't write that. I should do this. All right. So is there like a non-trivial map there? So I wrote the arrow. Is there a map there? Huh? Yeah. Yeah, that'll work, right? Yeah, me too. Yeah. So if we have this thing's like generate, or yeah, just one, I could do this, right? Yeah, sweet. Is that right? That's not, yeah. Yeah, that's not, wait, is that, that's not non-trivial. Yeah, that's not what I wanted, right? Yeah, nah. I mean, that's the trivial map. Yeah, that's not what we want. We want something like that. Is that? That doesn't quite make sense. So could someone else shout something out here? Is that the only map? So yeah, there's only two maps, right? So yeah, we just have the trivial map. What's the other one? So it sends 1-to-1, right? Yeah, okay, cool. So then what's the kernel of this? We have, yeah. It's not a trick question, right? Yeah, 2 and 0, 2. Okay, right, so the thing generated by 2 and this thing. All right, awesome. And then, yeah, we actually, in this case, we can also get one going the other way, right? I think maybe that's the one you said a second ago, right? That would be the non-trivial map there. So I wanted to. All right, awesome. So those are homomorphisms. Isomorphism, you have a bijection. That's a homomorphism. I'm not going to write that down. Okay, subgroups. All right, so yeah, maybe this is like slightly more interesting. So yeah, how about the subgroups of Z? There's no non-example here. Because I don't know, that's silly, right? All right, so like, what are the subgroups of the integers? Sorry? Yeah, right, so you take any number, just look at the thing that generates. How about if we look at like a finite cyclic group, do we all know what the subgroups of that are? If I tell you like, I don't know, like how many subgroups does like Z8 have? Actually, yeah, just a few. So yeah. So what is that? wait. What? Sorry. Yeah. Well, it's not necessarily a group otherwise, right? Yeah. Yeah. We did. We hit that, right? Oh no, we didn't hit that. Ah. Yeah. Sorry. This is like. And then non-example would be under multiplication. Right. Zero doesn't have a multiplicative inverse. I mean, you could look at the units. Yeah. All right. Cool. So like, let's say I write this thing as, and the only reason I'm thinking about this right now is this might be a good example for us in a second to try to look at products, to compute subgroups of products. If I write this thing as like, everybody else call this X, right? All right. That makes sense. Everyone. So like, what's the subgroup generated by X to the N? Maybe. It's like just more warming up here. You guys all, like, do you know what to say, how to express that in sort of a standard form? No, sorry, so this means like, so this is the group, sorry, these guys are like tied together. It's generated by this element X of order N, so X here is like 1, right? And then I'm looking at M times 1, right, or like X to the M in multiplicative notation. Sorry, what?
Z my greatest common divisor of
M. Yeah, nice, right, yeah, so this would be like, well, generated by that, right? GCD? Yeah. All right, cool. All right, so we know what those guys are. All right, how about normal subgroups? Oh, and maybe, yeah, maybe let's do one more. Like, how about S3? Does anyone know what S3 is? The permutation groups? Or like SN? Right, okay, so what are the subgroups of S3? Well, that's one of them. Nice, yeah. Let's do the subgroup lattice for S3. All right, super. Yeah, so we've got an A3 here. All right, so S3 I can write out as sort of, you know, cycle notation here. So there are four more of those, and six altogether. So yeah, A3 would be generated by, or maybe what was A3 generated by? Yeah, so just give me one element.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3.
Okay, yeah, just a three cycle, 1, 2, 3, right, that'll do it. Bam. What's the other generator? Yeah, oh, awesome, that's fantastic. All right, super. What are the subgroups of A3?
One.
Yeah, just this trivial guy. Okay, do we have any other subgroups of S3 not in A3? All right, great. So how many of those are there?
Three.
Yeah, all right, super. So we got the thing generated by 1, 2, the thing generated by 1, 3, and the thing generated by 2, 3. And I think that's everything, right? Yeah. All right, super. Okay, so those are subgroups of 8. Oh, yeah, then I guess one more thing. I'm looking ahead. What are the normal subgroups? So I think I don't need to say what that is, it looks like. So what's a normal subgroup? It's just something that's closed under the action of conjugation, right? So what are the normal subgroups here, maybe just to start with? Yeah, everything is abelian, same thing for Z. How about this guy, though? Just the A3, right? Okay, so actually AN is always normal in SN, right? So is it easy to see why that's true?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, why is that true? Oh my God! No, yeah. No. I mean, yeah, but why? Right? No, yeah. Index theorem, but like, why? Why index theorem? Just directly, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Kernel the determinant function, the sine function, or you could just like the other definition is like in terms of two cycles, right? What does it mean to be like an odd permutation? Like, what does it mean to be an even permutation? Right, if you conjugate by an even permutation, it doesn't change the parity of the permutation. So that's like another way to see that. All right, cool. So we got normal subgroups, you know, normal, done. I'm just going to write BAM. All right. Yeah, we're all over that. Okay, quotient groups. So you have a normal subgroup, you can form the quotient group, and that's the same thing as sort of specifying a surjective homomorphism. Right? Kernels of surjective homomorphisms are the same thing as normal subgroups. All right, how about simple groups? So yeah, some examples of, so does anyone, or maybe I should just say what a simple group is first. So you guys probably know this too, but simple group's a group that doesn't have any non-trivial normal subgroups, right? So the trivial subgroup, the one element subgroup is always normal. And if you conjugate the identity by something, you just get the identity back. The whole group is always normal, right? You conjugate anything in the group by something in the group, you end up back in the group. But there could be other subgroups that are also closed under conjugation. If there are, then it's not simple. If there aren't, then it is simple. And so what's an example of a simple group? Maybe. Yeah, nice, right? So yeah, Z mod P for P prime. All right, so if P is prime, there are only, oh man. Hey, speak of the devil. What's going on, man? I haven't seen you in like 2 years. Yeah, oh man, I'm just, sorry, I'm a wellspring of emotion right now. We'll catch up later. All right, so if P is prime, ZP only has two subgroups, right? So it's sort of trivially, I mean, simple, right? But how about a simple group that doesn't have no other subgroups? Yeah, no, oh yeah, right, so it's, so yeah, if you take AN, so the alternating group where N is greater than or equal to 5, right? That thing ends up being simple. But that's got other subgroups, right? Okay. Or yeah, does it have other subgroups? How about just like A5? Can someone find a non-trivial subgroup of A5?
E5.
Sorry?
What is it?
E5?
No, I don't know.
Exceptional group?
cyclic groups of order 2.
Yeah, sure. So give me an element that generates a cyclic group of order 2 inside of A5.
1, 2, 2, 3.
Eight,
1, 2, 3, 4, sorry.
Okay. It was like grumbling my discontent, a good way to communicate that. But, all right, yeah, okay, great. So there are guys in there. So that you have other subgroups, but they end up not being normal. Let's not check that. All right, move back here. All right, so center. Does everyone know what the center is? Center of a group. Right, so yeah, so you have the subgroup. So I guess start out just by defining it as a set of all elements in the group that commute with every other element in the group. And it turns out they form a group. It's not hard to check, I guess. And so that's the center. So how about like what's the center of? So usually you write Z for the center, right? Z of G. Okay, so what's the center of? This is funny, right? I can write Z of Z. Yeah, everything, right? Okay, yeah. So how about something more interesting? Like, what's the center of maybe AN? Does AN have a center? Yeah, it's trivial, right? Okay, awesome. How about the center of SN? Yeah, right. Well, if this had trivial center, this has to too, right? Because it's a bigger group. All right. What about when N equals 1? N equals 2. Yeah, what about when N equals 2? Is that still true even the degenerate ends? Okay, awesome. So we're safe. All right, super. So that's the center. All right, so just two more, and then I guess we'll get to the main question. So the direct product, or direct sum, I guess we're just thinking about finite groups here. It doesn't really matter. It's like the same thing. So this is just like for notation. You guys are probably not confused about this anymore, but I kind of remember spending too much time thinking about this distinction. There's sort of like an internal way to think about the direct product and sort of like an external way and a categorical way, and we're not going to talk about the third one, but just the first two. So if you've got a group G and you've got two subgroups, say G1 and G2, they're both contained in G, and you know that their intersection is trivial, so. And you also know that they actually generate the group if you just take products of the elements in the two group just as a set, then you say that G is the direct product. And I'll write a little plus inside of a circle there. So this is saying that G is like the internal direct product of G1 and G2. Now if you start out with G and you find G1 and G2 inside it, right? That's sort of like how you think about that happening. Alternatively, you might start out with G1 and G2 and want to construct a group G. And then, so a way you can do that is you just look at the Cartesian product, right? So just literally all of the pairs, G1 and G2, and you just do operations component by component, right? And then if you identify G1 with sort of the first component subgroup here and G2 with the second component subgroup, then this external direct product actually ends up being isomorphic to the internal direct product of G1 and G2, and the isomorphism is given by those identifications. So a way to think about this is the R is also a group, right? Like just the real numbers. And so you can think of like the x-axis and the y-axis, but the x-axis has that like that second zero coordinate, right? And the y-axis has the first zero coordinate, so they're kind of getting embedded into the plane. So if you think of the x-axis as having that second coordinate and the y-axis as having the first zero coordinate, then it's like internal direct product. Does that make sense? All right, so that's that. And so the last thing, which is maybe going to be new to you, or probably going to be new, is the fibered product. So same, it's kind of like the same kind of deal in terms of there being, I guess, kind of a couple of different ways of looking at it. So looks like I've given up on the example non-example stuff, so I'm just going to. All right, so say you have two fixed groups, say G1 and G2, and you've got two surjective, so the double arrow there, surjective homomorphisms onto some other group Q. So this is fixed, right? Okay, and now you consider the category of all triples of groups with maps that make this diagram commute. And then the universal object in this category is defined to be the fiber product. So it's the pullback of this diagram. All right, so I'm going to say that another way now. If you start out with a direct product, and you've got two groups. Do I need that? Actually, I guess I don't need to do that. You've got two maps, so two surjective maps from G1 to Q and from G2 to Q. You can look at this, form this group, in the Cartesian product. You can form this group, which is all the pairs G1, G2 inside of the full Cartesian product, such that alpha 1 of G1 is equal to alpha 2 of G2. And so you're looking at all things in the Cartesian product that have that sort of agree under these two maps. Okay, so does this parse? Okay, so let's just find a fibered product really quick. Just find one and see what it looks like. All right, so what were some of our examples of groups? So just to be real concrete, we could look at like Z4. Right, that was one of the things on our list, just Z mod n, and we could call that thing G1. And let's just to keep this real down to earth. Right, there's like another group. So we're going to look at some G inside of the Cartesian product. And we need to pick two surjective homomorphisms, right? One defined on G1 and one defined on G2. So that amounts to finding a common quotient of G1 and G2. Right? So the way we realize those quotients, or one way to do it, is just to find some normal subgroups in there and just mod out. Right? So we know that if we mod out by, so someone actually, right, we said this out loud earlier, if you take the sort of the Z2 in here, the thing generated by 2, you mod out by that, you'll get something isomorphic to Z2, right? So let's just do that. Let's say alpha 1, so we'll take Q is actually going to be equal to Z2, right? We'll take alpha 1 to be the map that sends 2 to 1, right? You mod out by 2. All right. And then alpha 2 is just going to be that sort of the identity. All right. Okay. So this thing is going to surject onto Z2. This is just an isomorphism. Let's figure out, I guess, what the fibered product is. So how do we start doing this? Actually, maybe someone kind of set me up here. I can write down the equation, right? Something like, or yeah. So what does this mean? That's right. Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly the definition. Yeah.
So zero works for G1 and G2.
I'm gonna guess it to what your intuition is here. We can just go element by element and literally list them all. All right. I'm okay with that. All right. So does everyone see that like 0, 0 works? Okay. Great. Right. Because if you look at the quotient mod 2 here, you get 0. This is just the identity map, right? Okay. So what else? I mean, we could. So you want to throw out another one? Or is there like just a deep, insightful perspective that we can adopt?
That's as deep as it
can. Okay. Sorry? It's like embarrassingly hard to detect where like voices come from looking at a room. I don't know if you feel that way when you're TAing. I did it that time. Does one-on-one work? Everyone's quiet, so I don't get uncomfortable. I'm immune to feeling awkward. I'll just stand here in dead silence. Don't make this a competition. I will not lose. All right, that's what I say on a first date too. Never goes over very well. All right, yeah. So one one, does that work? So what does this go to under the quotient map?
One.
one. Okay, so this looks like it works, I guess, to me, right? All right, I mean, what else? 2, all right, 2-0. 3-1. Is that everything? Yeah, all right, super. Okay, so like, you're looking for pairs of things, like a just where the, I mean, basically you want the parity of the left thing to be equal to the right thing. Is that like a simple way of saying it? Right? Parity, like mod 2. Yeah, I don't know, like, so what, like 0 is sort of like even, right? So you want like even numbers go with 0, right? Parity matches what it's actually equal to on the right. The odd numbers go with 1, right? So 1 is like the parity of an odd number, mod 2 parity. All right, so this is our group. So, and actually the notation here, so this is literally our group as a set. The notation is, we call it G1 and G2, is G1 crossover Q G2. Or if you want to be sort of like really, really precise, you could list the whole triple, right? But we're not always going to do that because we're lazy. Or I'm lazy. All right, and also it's just like abusively long looking. Right, so the maps are implicit. You don't write this without specifying the maps somewhere in the conversation, right? Otherwise it's not well defined. And maybe as a quick aside, it really isn't well defined. It's actually only defined up to automorphisms of Q, which I think actually changes the isomorphism class of the fibered product. So I'm just going to say that. So specifying the isomorphism class of the quotient here doesn't actually tell you what the group is, even up to isomorphism. I think that's right. All right, so great. So can someone tell me what this is isomorphic to in terms of something that we recognize, not as a fibered product? Yeah, right. So it's just generated by like 1-1, right? Because you add this to itself, you get that. You add this to that, you get that. You add this to that, you get 0. So, great. So we actually can recognize this guy. All right. Super. So that's a fibered product. Okay. So now I'm gonna. That was like a lot of warming up. Here's the big. I think this. Yeah. I'm there. All right. That was fast. So here's the statement or whatever. That was sort of like the punchline. And I think this thing goes by a name, although like some people seem to not care about the name or know it. So this is Gorzatz lemma. Okay, so write it kind of sloppily or whatever. It says that every subgroup of a product, G1 cross G2, is a fibered product H1 cross over Q H2 for some H1 and G1 H2 and G2. And I guess what I'm not saying here is actually the correspondence here can be phrased in such a way so that it's bijective. So you can bijectively parameterize the subgroups of G1 cross G2 by fibered products of the subgroups of the factors. All right, so, and the proof's not hard. I'm not going to write down all the details, but I'll explain what the correspondence is in a second. So first of all, I'll just say I think this is, like, really, really good as far as, like, how much bang for your buck you get out of a theorem. Because you can actually, like, write an algorithm that does this. And, you know, I mean, people have, obviously, you know, computer algebra packages with it. These things are all going to be easy to compute. And I guess we'll see in a second what we need.
I think it's not
as computationally effective, right, for inference, but I think it's true just for any group. Yeah, I mean the proof is like extremely short and doesn't involve, yeah, I don't think you use finites anywhere. Yeah, the only reason I might doubt myself is like I've like been thinking in terms of group theory, I've only thought about like finite groups, right? So I'm like I have like an ingrained bias or whatever. Should add that to the list of things I don't believe in. Infinite groups. Yeah, I'm sure they have those. Yeah, they can look at their, right, exactly. They can look at their infinite cardinal groups on the moon in Canada. All things that don't exist. All right, so I need to define a map one way, right? So I didn't write everything down. So one set here is the set of all subgroups of G1 cross G2. The other set is the set of all fibered products. I want two maps that are inverses to each other. So let's go in one direction first. So I'm kind of, this is like the maps to arrow instead of like the double arrow, because I'm not proving a converse, it's just two maps. All right, so suppose we've got our group H and the Cartesian product. There are, I guess, two kinds of groups that we care about in this statement. I care about the projections, so I'm just going to write H1 is pi 1 g1, right? So that's projection onto the first factor. H2 is going to be projection onto the second factor. I don't even really need to write that. And then these other kinds of groups that are intersections with the factors, which I don't have names for, so I'm just going to do that. Okay, so our statement is going to be made in terms of these guys. So, and here's the map. Oh, sorry, why did I write this down? I wanted to think about these for a second before I said what the map is. So everyone knows, I think everyone's real comfortable with projection maps, but I mean, none of this is really deep, but this is like, I guess, sort of surprisingly tricky, I think, the first time you encounter it. Do you guys see what the distinction is here? I mean, obviously it's not written the same way, but can you think of like an example of the intersection that might be tricky or that might sort of confuse someone? Or make this real, real basic. Just give me an example where these two things aren't equal, just to make sure we're on the sort of same page here. When is the projection not equal to the intersection? Just an example, not like a general statement. Or are they always equal? Maybe I really messed up. That would be awkward. Even I have my limits.
I didn't want to say anything.
But you said, break the silence. All right, let's just think. So great thing about groups is they're so general that like everyone can find something they're familiar with that is one. So how about just like R2, right? That's R cross R. That's our Cartesian product. And like what are our favorite subgroups of R2, like the x and y axis, right? Right, okay. So that's how we're thinking of R2. So that Cartesian product, that direct product. So now what are the kinds of subgroups associated to some H that's a subgroup of R2? Well, we've got the projection onto the x-axis and projection onto the y-axis. That's these two guys. And then we've also got intersection with the x and y-axis. Right? Okay, so how about just like the line y equals x? That's a subgroup, right? All the linear subspaces are subgroups. What do you get when you project y equals x onto the x-axis? When you project it onto the y-axis, you get... What happens when you intersect it with the x-axis?
Zero.
Yeah, intersect it with the y-axis, you get zero, right? So you have containments. This thing is always going to be contained in that thing.
Yeah.
Thanks. No, this thing's always going to be contained in that thing, right? But they don't have to be equal, right? And like this, I mean, that's kind of a super trivial example, but this kind of like the difference between the projections and the intersections, I think in some sense actually characterizes all of like the mystery of finding subgroups. And I actually read like an undergraduate book on Lie algebras, and they had a name for this kind of phenomena that they gave like a cutesy term for, which I really like, which was the diagonal fallacy. Like, you assume that, like, every operator is diagonalizable, kind of implicitly. You don't actually say that out loud, but you make an argument that would have worked if your thing was diagonalizable, but it's not. And so it's kind of the same thing, right? This diagonal stuff just is more confusing. All right, anyway, so there's our guy. Let me write down what there are our guys. Let me write down what the map is. All right, so the map is you send H... to this tuple, H1, H2, H intersect G1, H intersect G2, and tau H. And tau H, I need to tell you what that is. That's going to be H1 mod H intersect G1 going to H2 mod H intersect G2. So that's tau H. So now there should be a claim here. So I just said some stuff. What should the claim be here if I were actually going to prove this, which I'm not? We could do this later. But. And so, I mean, there's some stuff that I guess, I mean, like, why is this a subgroup, right? But I mean, not that, but this one's a little more serious, right? Like, why is this normal and that? That's also, like, not, I feel like that's not that serious. That's really, really, really easy. But, like why is this well-defined and why is it an isomorphism? I guess is maybe what I consider to be the thing you should actually check. Does that make sense? Like, why is this even a map? Like, why is there a map there? I didn't say what it is. It's like, okay, so, yeah. So let me, so I'm going to say tau H of H1, sorry, tau H of H1 is H2 if and only if H1, H2 is an H. So still, I mean, I still have to show that it's well-defined. So claim tau H is a well-defined isomorphism. All right, bam, that's the map in one direction. Let's do the map in the other direction. Okay, so now my set is going to be, you know, tuples like this. So it's going to be subgroup of G1, subgroup of G2, normal subgroup of H1, normal subgroup of H2, and then an isomorphism between the quotients. Right, so some stuff is getting hidden there, like the quotients have to be isomorphic for one, right? All right, so I'm going to take H1, H2. So now these are not projection of H onto the first and second coordinates, right? Because there is no H yet. It's just two subgroups. And then I've got N1, N2, and then just tau. I'm not going to put a sub H there. Where Ni, right, normal in Hi, subgroup of Gi, and then H1 mod N1 by tau is an isomorphism to N2. Okay, so that's just my domain for the map. And then this is all going to get mapped to H1 fiber over Q H2. So I need to tell you, I guess, like sort of three things, right? I need to tell you what Q is, I need to tell you what alpha 1 is, and I need to tell you what alpha 2 is. Because that's what, and that's the information that determines the fiber product. So Q is just going to be H2 mod N2. Alpha 2 is going to be tau composed with the projection map of G onto the second, sorry, onto the first coordinate. That's alpha 1. And then alpha 2 is going to be just the projection map onto the second coordinate. Okay, so this is a map this way, and then the statement of the theorem is just remains to show that these two things are inverses of each other, which I'm not going to do. It's like very, very, very trivial, but it's kind of tedious, and I don't want to write it all down. All right, so that's it. And so this is, so let's say we believe this, not, like how could we use this if we were actually given a product? You know, we need to search for normal subgroups of one factor, search for normal subgroups of the second factor, look for all the quotients they could have in common, right? And then just form, using our formula, form this subgroup, and then, you know, we could list all our subgroups out like that. Okay, so that's, I mean, that's like the main thing. I'll say one more thing. There's like a, I mean, you can kind of generalize this to look at other stuff. One question that you might want to look at is what about the same statement for fibered products? So this statement, this lemma gives you a way to look at or find the subgroups of a direct product in terms of the subgroups of the factors. What if you wanted to find the subgroups of a fibered product, right? Then this doesn't actually work anymore. You need to kind of soup it up a little bit. What if you wanted to find like normal subgroups instead of just arbitrary subgroups, right? That would be like another thing that you need to sort of deal with. What happens if instead of a direct product, you had a semi-direct product, or just even just like an extension of groups, so maybe it doesn't even split, right? You could try to answer all these kinds of basic sort of questions in group theory where you build up a big group from smaller groups, and there are a lot of ways to do that. You could try to answer those questions in terms of the subgroups of the factors or the pieces that you're looking at, and the answer becomes like more and more complicated. And this was really clean, I think. And the same answer for semi-direct products is kind of a train wreck, I think. It's really messy, which is why I decided not to talk about it. But I will say one souped-up version of this, which is what do you do for normal things? So this is like normality criterion for direct products. So H is a normal subgroup of G1 cross G2 if and only if the following hold. So Hi is normal in Gi. Right, so that would have to be true. That part's obvious, I guess, if you know that the image of a normal subgroup under a surjective homomorphism is normal. Right, so that normality pushes forward under surjections. And then you also need H intersect GI to be normal in GI. I think that's slightly less obvious. And then maybe the least obvious thing is this, that you need HI mod H intersect GI to be contained in the center of GI mod H intersect GI. And you need this for both I equals 1 and 2. All right, so this maybe isn't, this is still pretty simple, not quite as simple, but the really cool thing, I think, is that you only need to look at each factor like independently, sort of like one at a time. You don't need to look at the interactions of the factors. All right, so that's kind of a bizarre thing, I think, right? It's like, they're, like, what if the factors interacted somehow, right? Like, couldn't that affect normality? Right, but it doesn't for direct products. For fibered products or semi-direct products or stuff, it does. All right, so we have that, and then, so maybe here's, like, so, like, here's the point where maybe we can try to use this, and I think, I mean, do I have time, or? Oh, yeah, nice. Okay, great. So here's what I want to do, if you guys are with me. I was going to try to break you all up into like little teams, and then each one of you guys would try to enumerate the subgroups of a product of your choosing. All right. All right, you ready? I'm just gonna, and if you guys just clump up, just start it happening. Maybe like five of y'all. I know, right? It's crazy.
I had no idea of the sets.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's so good. It's so good. I don't know. How did I never see this before? Actually, it's weird. We kind of just like started figuring it out because we needed a little bit, and then like I slowly, as I was looking at like related stuff, found references to it. Although I still haven't found And actually, the first paper I found that had this in it was like wrong. Yeah. Well, it had like kind of the, it had like the right statement, but it only said it about one factor. And they didn't use the same map that I wrote down. They kind of wrote down an asymmetric looking map. You see what I'm saying? And then they said it about, so that maybe that's why they messed up. But I don't know. All right. So who's a group? I want to. Is this one group here? All right. What group are you guys? What product are you guys gonna do?
Right.
Wait. Hold on. Shirts and skins. All right. I just want to see. I want to see what groups you guys are doing. So there's no overlap. All right. So you guys are doing. Sorry. Which one? What are you guys doing? Z cross Z. All right. So Dustin. All right. How about? Are you guys? Maybe you guys should meld. Meld. Oh, just. Oh, okay. So I'm gonna. What's your name?
No.
Sorry.
Jack.
Oh my God! Everyone knows him now. It's Team Jack, and I'm gonna put it in all caps. All right, who's the next group? Is that you all over here? What's your name? I like you. You talked a lot.
What? Actually useful.
Jake? Okay, what are you guys going to do?
Yes. Okay.
All right.
So all you need to know is that it's every separate part is P to the N.
Are y'all together? No. You guys, no flow. Clump. Viscous, no flow. Clump. Are you guys a group? I'm clump. Clump. Are you guys are a group. All right. Yeah. Who's the leader? It's you, Joe. Team Joe.
I don't know if we can.
All right. You guys decide what product you want to do. This is too much clumping, right? This is too much. Yeah. Bifurcate. Are y'all in this? Are you gonna do this?
Sure. Yeah.
What's your name, man?
James.
What are you guys gonna do? No, don't do that. Don't do that.
Unless you want what I'm messing with.
What's a good one?
What's a good one? A4 cross A4. Or you don't have to, you know, they don't have to be the same group in both factors. So.
So what? You can let M be anything.
A4 plus SU2, is that what you said? Oh, cross Z2, you said? Oh, SU2. Don't. All right. Seriously?
Why are you erasing it? Oh, yeah.
Oh, did I erase? Jake.
All the subgroups of the two factors.
So A4 cross A4?
Yeah.
A4 cross A4? Okay.
So the quotient is singular. So we have all the subgroups. And now we have to figure out their common quotients, right? Because then we can figure out all the factors. So,
what about y'all? Are y'all gonna do something? Or y'all just?
I don't know any of this.
That's fine. That's fine. Oh, and you A4 cross SU2 on behalf of the group. Yeah, here you guys want to be on my team? You gotta be on my team? You guys got to come up here then. Though. Or actually.
Second, fourth, third, fourth.
Yeah. What's your name?
Mega.
How do you spell it?
M-E-G-H-A.
All right, you're team captain. Congratulations, you've been promoted. All right. Just let me make sure they got a... Jake. Yeah. I love it. All right, awesome. Cross what? Cross the quaternions?
There's only two
subgroups. You need two groups, and you want to find their subgroups. Okay. The subgroup of the subgroups of the product.
Let's just look at direct product. Okay. Zero cross zero.
Yeah. Four
cross.
All right. What do you call the quaternions? Q. 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 Is this? How do you write the quaternions?
What?
Quaternions? Q8?
Yes,
Q8? Yeah. All right.
So I changed that. The notation is ambiguous, sort of, depending on what you do. But we decided to do FP cross FP instead of Piatta Gates. It's two.
Is that what you meant initially? Yeah,
so I wanted to do that for my own benefit, because I could use that.
That sounds, was that hard? That sounds like it might be hard.
I mean, the subgroups of ZP are easy. They're all P to the N ZP. They're all index P to the N with quotient sigma P to the N. But like P to the N ZP is isomorphic. So they all have. Each one is countable with any quotients of any P power.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, if you have an infinite group, you want to find something nice to parameterize the automorphism classes,
yes,
the quotients,
right,
by. So.
It's not that hard. CP is kind of rigid. It doesn't have...
Yeah. All right. No, it's not. It's just practical. This is how he puts money in the bank,
yeah,
Nicole.
Seriously.
Wait.
I've wondered this before.
Joe.
But, okay, so for this...
Z4 cross Z4.
I love it. Awesome.
Okay, so these are the subgroups, 0 and 0. So now we have to...
All right, sorry about that, guys. Leave you hanging. All right, what are we going to do?
Wait, what?
If we take one of these subgroups, either
0
or
Z minus... Okay, so I don't know. Mega?
Yeah.
Nice to meet you. Sorry, I'm chalky. What's your name?
Corey. Yeah.
Sorry?
Andy.
All right. Are you guys like... I know that. But are you guys like freshmen or sophomores?
I'm a second year, but I just transferred.
Okay. Okay. Have you guys not taken group theory yet or anything? Okay. Yeah. That's fine. Yeah. So we want something... like really down to earth, maybe. So to start off with, yeah, no, it's oh yeah. I mean, you gotta start somewhere, right? Can I take my mic off?
All right.
No.
No. You need it for the video.
You need to hear me talking to my little group here.
Take it off.
I don't know. I feel like it's.
Well.
All right.
Zero again.
I'm gonna do that. It just occurred to me. Maybe I was violating y'all's privacy and stuff.
Do you have a homomorphism?
You need it for anything?
Why do you need it? Then the kernel, the things that get sent to 0, is a subgroup, so it's either 0 or 0. So it's either So now for each of these pairs, no, that basically the Zmod PZ mod kernel is equal to the image. So, like, if the kernel is trivial, then the image is So now we go through each of these pairs and we figure out what the common is. Well, zero. When you're working with abelian groups, quotients are actually the same as suburbs. But you don't need to know that. You just say, what are the homomorphic images of zero? Well, zero. What are the homomorphic images of Zmod PZ? Well, Zmod PZ and zero are both homomorphic images. And then because if you've got a homomorphic image of Zmod PZ, the kernel is a suburb, so it's either zero or the whole thing. And so the quotient is correspondingly the whole thing is zero. So the quotients are just the same thing. So now we go through each of these pairs and look at what are the common quotients. So for the pair 0, 0, the only common quotient is 0. That 5 product is the direct product. It's the trivial.
What are the trivial? Well, here's one way to start.
For 0 and Z9PZ, so we're only interested in what do you we're only interested in common quotients. So 0 only has one quotient. So again, it's just the only thing we can do is map 0. And this 5 required again is because what is this? The set pairs 0, n, where the conditions they map to the same thing is automatic. So it's the whole thing, so we get So this is the copy of Zmod PZ in the right back. Same argument. So same argument for this one. You're only going to get the left back. This is going to be the left back. And then for this one, now here we've got two common quotients, but we're just going to get some of them already done. So if we take the common quotient to be 0, then we take the 0 map, then the condition for the fiber product is vacuous. They automatically, the two coordinates automatically map to the same thing. So we just get the whole thing. And then if we take Zmod PZ,
you say one of them is for my
or something I didn't think of. So if we take Zmod PZ, so now here's the issue. Now there's automorphism. Because Zmod PZ has P minus 1 automorphism. So does it change anything? Because we can do a different, we can pick a different map at each side. So yeah, it does. So this is the hard part. So
for whatever it is,
zero is the
So we have to look at two automorphisms of Zmod. So this is what's called this the thing we're trying to compute is called the equalizer. So we look at two automorphisms. So what do the automorphisms of Zmod PZ look like? It means multiple. It's multiplication by some integer relatively prime to p. That's what it looks like. So any integer relatively prime to p, might as well take them to be one minus one. Okay, and that's it. So pick two integers by straight. You have to figure out what in here do they agree on? Because then you're looking at pairs. Such that M X and Y. So this is not.
So the subgroup.
One thing, okay, so one thing about this is that if you get a pair in here, I think the x coordinate will need to determine the y coordinate because since n is relatively kind of a pain, it's actually a unit in here, so you get x and it is n y. So the coordinate determines it. So we only have to come here, this is like one of the math problems. So yeah, this is how you do it. You can't write them all down with the PR order. You can do it for any given one. You take x, and then you figure out the coordinate that goes here. So what do? You invert m, find its inverse for m mod p, and then take that times n, or y is n inverse of n. So you take n, you invert mod p, and then you just do n inverse. So there's going to be some parametrization in terms of pairs of integers relatively prime or t. So your course will quickly order of this meeting. It will first pick any x, and if you pick any x, you get a unique y. So these are all these. Or
p. They have like.
Yeah, they're all these six. So they're all going to be zero for p.
But they're all
the pairs of integers. It's unclear to me whether it's like distinct pairs can be the same copy of the time.
Or you can go to Dr.
Like, so let's do the site.
All reality is
just go to the math website.
So then we can take
never required
one, any guy. So then what do you get?
Which would be like an
obvious. So we're just taking the identity map.
I'm not saying like how these groups look
positive.
So just
x.
The
website has a menu there. Zero less than x.
So you know that these are subgroups.
Right. So we get the diagonal subgroups.
Yes.